From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. There's a new COVID variant, and experts are saying we could see a rise in cases this summer. Also, some folks under the age of 65 are reporting they can't get a COVID booster shot. So here to tackle these questions and to answer your listener questions is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. Remember, if you have a public health question for Dr. Pate, you can send us an email right now, idahomatters@boisestate.edu, and we will do our best to get those questions answered today. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
So, Dr. Pate, I want to start with this new COVID variant and what it means exactly in particular for the summer. So let's just start with what this new variant is.
So this new variant, it's actually more than one variant, but they have a common set of mutations that are concerning. And those mutations are referred to as FLIRT, F-L-I-R-T, for the technical substitutions that we see in their genetic material. But the two variants particularly that we're seeing on the rise are KP.2 and KP.1.1. There is, at this time, no evidence that it causes more severe disease. The concern is that since Omicron, and these are, you know, down distant relatives on the Omicron family tree, if you will, so they're still Omicron variants. But what we saw before Omicron was the virus making a lot of changes to improve how well it could transmit. Since Omicron, we have seen that the virus has decided to focus on ways to get around our existing immunity. And it can't get around it completely. But what we are seeing is that some of these, and it appears that those with these FLIRT mutations will be in this group, they're getting more immune evasive. And what that means is, for people listening, is if you have not had a recent infection or a recent booster or COVID vaccine, you're not going to have the degree of protection that you had in the past. In the past, an infection would protect you for a longer period of time from reinfection or serious disease. Same thing for vaccines. Now, for both, it's a shorter duration of protection. But most of that loss of protection is from infection. People that have had a full set of vaccines are still seeing protection from severe disease.
Okay. So I want to now talk about summertime and what we could potentially see with COVID, because there are health experts saying that with these new variants, we could definitely see an increase in cases. Dr. Pate, what are your thoughts on this? Because we should note that for the last 4 years, we see a surge every single summer.
Well, that's right. In fact, we see a surge essentially every season. And so this would not be unexpected at all. What we dealt with at the very beginning of the year was a real change from what we had been seeing recently with Omicron. What we had been seeing since Omicron is that we would have several circulating variants that we'd be trying to see who's going to outcompete who. But at the beginning of this year, one of those variants called JN.1, it took over essentially everything, meaning that it had a fitness advantage and it could outcompete all the other variants. And so basically the first part of this year, if you got infected, we could certainly be very likely sure it was JN.1. But that's atypical for Omicron, for it just to be one variant. And so now we're starting to see this return to a number of different variants, because it appears that JN1 is certainly on the down slide of its proportion of infections. And we've seen this KP.2 increase fairly rapidly to now account for about a quarter of infections. And what long-term listeners will remember is that I have told them one thing you can just about hang your hat on is when we see a number of circulating variants and we're watching them, once one of them gets close to being at 50%, you can almost be sure there's going to be a surge that follows. Mm. And so what we're seeing is this KP.2 really take off. It's about a quarter of all cases now. But if it keeps on increasing like this, and we can certainly follow this over the upcoming weeks on the show, then mm-hmm. we certainly would expect that that would cause a surge. And models right now are suggesting it would be probably sometime in July. And that's not precise, but that would be kind of a best guess.
And Dr. Payne, I know that some health experts are saying that, you know, think of it more as a swell rather than a big, huge wave or a surge. But also that maybe it won't be as severe that when in regards to what we've seen in the past. So my question for you is, do you think it'll be more of, you know, kind of a swell, but also when these health experts say, you know, not as severe, do they mean not as severe because we won't see as many cases, or the cases won't be as severe?
Well, they could mean either, but typically when we're talking about severe disease, what we mean by severe COVID is that the person requires hospitalization for treatment and requires oxygen. Now, it might not mean they need to go on a ventilator or something, but it means that they're sick enough, they can't be managed at home. They need to be in a hospital setting, and they're probably going to need to have a tube in their nose that just flows oxygen there for them to breathe. Now, some people do get more severely ill and have much more aggressive means of us giving them oxygen or even a ventilator. But severe disease just means that you have to be in, you need the hospital and you need some kind of additional oxygen treatment. What I think these folks are talking about, which I generally agree with, but I do think we need to have just a little bit of note of caution, and that is that for the most part, we do not expect to see large numbers of hospitalizations again, like what we saw, you'll remember, Gemma, in the fall of 21 and the winter of 22, we had two times here in Idaho where we went on crisis standards of care. We don't anticipate that is going to happen to that degree again. And that's because most of us do have some underlying immune protection still. Now, the exception is those that are immunocompromised. We can still see them get very deathly ill. And the other group is those over 65, particularly those over 75. And what is really concerning to me, Gemma, is that we have seen a lot of assisted living centers not offering, you know, campaigns of boosters to these folks. They're not seeming to take this as seriously as before. We're seeing a lot of older individuals who think, well, they've had their shots in the past, so they're good. Older folks, their immune systems are not as strong, and they tend to lose immune protection over time. So they are the most likely to end up in the hospital. But there's a surprising another group that probably very few listeners realize, and that's very young children. If you look at who ends up in the hospital severely ill. It's the group I just mentioned, particularly those over 75, but it's also infants and toddlers, mm-hmm. and they often end up in the ICU. So it's either extremes, but in between, it's anybody with a lot of risk factors or who's immunocompromised.
So I want to talk about the COVID boosters next, Dr. Pate, in particular, in light of this new variant that we're seeing. So we went to get our COVID boosters on Monday. We're going to be traveling in a couple of weeks. I wanted to make sure, you know, that we were like, oh, there's a new one. Let's go get it. The pharmacist said it was the exact same shot that we had received in October. So we weren't able to get it because it is only for folks who are over 65 and older. So here's my question. A, didn't realize that, but B, with this new variant, are those of us protected if we haven't gotten a booster since October?
All right, excellent question. So let's go back to the beginning. And that is that this latest shot is called the 2023-2024 updated vaccine. And that first became available around September of last year. So that shot was not a booster. That was a whole new vaccine. And it was based on the variant XBB.1.5. Now that's long gone. Nevertheless, all of these viruses share some commonality from the standpoint of our cellular immune systems. The antibody response changes, but the cellular response, which is really what protects you from becoming severely ill, has been very long lasting and common to all of these that we've seen so far. So hopefully everybody got an updated vaccine in last September. Now, mm-hmm. if you did not, you should get one. We're going to have a new vaccine this fall that will be different, but if you haven't had one, you should get one. Now, if you did get one, now to get a second one, now we're talking about a booster. And the booster does make sense because we know that the protection against infection does diminish fairly fast within a matter of months. Somebody like you who's getting ready mm-hmm. to do travel, and especially if it's international travel, you're going to have a lot of exposures. And frankly, nobody wants to get COVID while they're on vacation, and especially when they're out of town, especially if they're getting sick. So it's a reasonable thing to do. So the guidelines that the CDC issued is that if you got that first one, back in September. Now, if you didn't, anybody can get it, basically, if you're over 6 months. If you didn't get that one back in September, you can get one now if you're over 6 months of age. However, if you did get it back then, the recommendations from the CDC are is that it should be a second one for those that are over 65 and for those who have moderate to severe immunocompromise. Moderate to severe immunocompromise means it could mean things like you have cancer, you're getting chemotherapy, mm-hmm. you've had a solid organ transplant, you have a primary underlying immunodeficiency, or you're taking an immunosuppressive medication for something. However, your doctor has the latitude on any of the vaccines that are approved. And those vaccines are the Pfizer one and the Moderna one, to say, yes, under your individual circumstances, I think it is a good idea for you to get the vaccine. So it can fall out of those guidelines. If it's still a vaccine that's under an emergency use agreement, then the pharmacists and doctors are supposed to stick pretty much strictly to those criteria. So what I would do is either just if you can't get it from the pharmacist, then ask your doctor if they can just if they agree that you should get one. Mm-hmm. And I think that should be pretty liberal. And then you can go and get it with that doctor's okay, or that doctor's office, especially if they're associated with one of the hospitals, might have access to the vaccine and could give it to you themselves. But there should be plenty of leeway with the Pfizer and Moderna that you can get it even if you aren't exactly in those criteria. They have to be a little bit more strict about Novavax.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was a good point, because I have to say, Dr. Payne, I was really surprised. I was like, oh, okay. Well, I thought I could get it, but that's just good information. So moving on from COVID, we have been talking about the avian influenza here for almost 2 months now, Dr. Pate. We have a third confirmed outbreak in Idaho.
We do. We have a third dairy farm with an outbreak. And we now have two more farms. You know, previously on your show, we talked about Cache County, where we were seeing these outbreaks. Now we have two suspected outbreaks. We're just waiting on the confirmatory test, but I'll be really shocked if they don't confirm it. We have two new outbreaks in Jerome County. And this is not surprising. We are seeing more and more dairy farms with these outbreaks across the country. The CDC just launched a wastewater reporting program for influenza A, of which avian influenza is that type of virus. And what we're seeing is there are many places across the country, even some places like California, where we didn't think there were these outbreaks, where we're detecting pretty sharp increases in influenza A. Now, the question would be, well, is that avian flu or is that the seasonal flu? And the way we would tell is to actually do the testing for that. But the CDC has thus far said they're not going to do that confirmatory testing. But what we do know is we're really at the tail end of the influenza season. So it would be quite unexpected to see a sharp rise in the middle of May in seasonal influenza A. So I think most people are certainly inferring that these spikes we're seeing are avian flu. But I do have to caution, most of those have not been tested. Some have, and they have been confirmed that, yes, it's the H5N1, the avian flu virus.
So I wanted to begin with a listener who sent us this question.
Yeah, this is a question for the doctor. If you're over 65, would getting the pneumonia vaccine help to avoid the RSV virus? Thank you.
So the answer,
is no, it won't. But it is a good idea if you're in that age group to get the pneumonia vaccine. The pneumonia vaccine is protection against, depending on which form you get, about 23 different types of bacterial pneumonia, which people that are in this age group are particularly vulnerable to. So it's protection against bacterial pneumonia, and we recommend that vaccine for everyone and at a lower age for some that are at higher risk. So talk to your doctor if you're over 50 about whether you should get the Pneumovax shot or pneumonia shot, but it won't protect against RSV.
Mm. So what should someone over the age of 65 do in regards to RSV then, Dr. Pate?
Well, fortunately, we have a new vaccine for RSV that's specific for that. And the good news is the early studies show it should probably give us 2 seasons worth of protection. So I got mine right at the beginning of the fall winter last year so that I'd be protected. And I'll be protected for next season as well. So for these folks, especially if you are going to be around young grandchildren, other young children, you teach in Sunday school, you are a daycare worker, whatever, talk to your doctor. And I would probably time your vaccine for this fall. So maybe when you go in around September or so, and you're talking about flu shots and COVID boosters, and just go ahead and talk to your doctor about the RSV shot.
So this listener writes in, Dr. Pate, and says, my family believes their natural slash organic food diet is enough to protect them from severe COVID infection. This family includes a five-year-old granddaughter. Two members have had two previous mild to moderate infections, and they have been coughing with congestion recently. They are vigorous anti-vaxxers. I have received the COVID shots, but do not live with them. Is there anything you can suggest to them to take the latest COVID vaccine?
Yes. You know, I've had a lot of conversations with people that are either anti-vax or vax hesitant. And I think that for this particular situation, without knowing the people, what I would start out is you're obviously very health conscious. You're trying to take good care of yourselves, eat well, have the right kind of nutrition, that kind of thing. So obviously you care about your health. And because you do, you know, there is a good chance that you won't get severe COVID, because one would assume if they're doing all those things, you know, that they have a good body weight, they're probably physically active, et cetera. However, there are other things that can happen to you with COVID, long COVID. We've got very, very strong evidence of neurologic problems from COVID, diabetes. And so I would focus not on shaming them or making them feel bad for being anti-vax, but capitalizing on the idea that they want to protect their health. They're doing all these things to make sure they stay healthy. And one of those ways that you can do that is by getting vaccinated, even if you're not worried about severe disease, because we are getting growing evidence that the vaccine can protect, not prevent, but it can certainly reduce the chances of long COVID. And a lot of these various chronic medical problems, and I would go on that theme.
So we've got another listener voicemail. Let's take a listen to that.
This is a question for Dr. Pate on Idaho Matters. I just returned from a once-in-a-lifetime riverboat cruise, and in preparation got a booster about 3 weeks ago, and was one of the only few, very few people who masked in every airport and on every flight. Unfortunately, for the second time since 2020, I tested positive for COVID this morning. The question is, first of all, it kind of shows how, in spite of our caution, how vulnerable we still are to this bug. But my question is, the first time I got COVID in 2021, of course, we went through all the isolation protocols. And I isolated in a separate room and slept in a separate room. Of course, my husband brought food up outside the door, et cetera. We both masked, washed every surface. How is today different? Is it true? I'm hearing that you can treat this like a cold now. I'll continue to wear a mask as long as I have symptoms. I haven't taken my temperature. I don't think I have a fever. But does my husband have to mask? Can we eat together as long as I don't breathe on him? How is it different now? Thank you for your answer. Thanks.
So that's a great question. So let's start with, there's a number of aspects to this question. First of all, airports are one of the areas that I am very commonly hearing from people that they were doing fine, they were taking these precautions, and then it was an airport where they think they got infected. And certainly we've been seeing evidence for that, and especially international airports. You're getting exposed to people from other countries. We've had measles exposures from airports, certainly lots of COVID. And so first of all, I would say to her, good for her for masking and taking those precautions, because even though she still got infected, and unfortunately, if it's only us taking the precautions and the airport doesn't have good ventilation, good filtration of the air, those kind of things, we're still going to be exposed. But the good news is the studies have repeatedly shown when you're wearing a high quality mask, you decrease what's called the viral dose, that the amount of virus that you're breathing in. And therefore, first of all, it may be low enough that you won't get infected, but even if it's enough to still get you infected, we see a correlation between lower viral dose and less severe illness. So it still probably gave her some protection against getting sicker than she might have otherwise been. And of course, the vaccine will do the same. Now, as to has anything changed? Has this become the common cold? Absolutely no. This virus still is causing things that we do not see with common cold, long COVID. We're seeing neurologic complications, like I mentioned. We're seeing people develop problems with their hearts, with blood clots, all kinds of different things. And that's not everybody, but you're not going to know ahead of time whether it's going to happen to you or not. The other thing is although the official guidance has changed about isolation, and certainly people's behavior has changed, the fundamentals of this virus and how it's transmitted and what the risks are has not changed a bit. So you did the right thing. We have studies showing that if one person in the family gets infected, as long as the other people are infected or vaccinated, and as long as you do the things that she mentioned, stay in a separate bedroom, use a dedicated bathroom, you reduce the chance of any of those other family members being infected by over 70%. And why is that important? It's important because the data is absolutely clear. The more number of times that you get infected with COVID, the higher your risk for developing long COVID, which if you talk to anybody with long COVID, they will tell you it is not fun and they would have done anything they could have to have prevented it. So you still want to isolate and you still want to protect your family members from getting infected.
So, Dr. Pate, our final question comes from Christy, and she writes, with Idaho's new ban on abortions, with things like amniocentesis, will they be an issue since something like amniocentesis can cause miscarriages?
Well, I think, you know, this is a really interesting question because it gets to the fact that the obstetrical care for women is complicated. And it's complicated enough for doctors and moms. I can tell you it's way too complicated for legislators, yet they're deciding how that care should be. And that's why we're in the mess we're in. And the problem is that there is a lot of lack of clarity about it, just exactly under what circumstances could that doctor be prosecuted. Now, if you talk to the Attorney General's office and the arguments that they made before the Supreme Court, they say nothing to fear here because of prosecutorial discretion, which means that a district attorney or other prosecutor, just because there might be a technical crime, they don't have to charge the person and prosecute them. But of course, we're hearing cases every day where Republicans are saying that they believe they're on the end of prosecution for improper motives. So doctors aren't real reassured. Now, amniocentesis, it's got a very low rate of causing the loss of the fetus, a fraction of a percent, but I do think these are all areas of concern. I would hope that that prosecutors are not going to want to go after a doctor, especially in a case where probably they'd be likely to lose because there was no intention to harm the baby. They're presumably doing the amniocentesis to make it a healthy pregnancy and help the mom. But I think when you're talking about if you're wrong on that, you could be going to jail. You can see why doctors are still nervous.
Oh, 100%. Well, Dr. Pate, as always, we so appreciate your time and expertise. We've been talking with Dr. David Pate. He is the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. Remember, if you have a public health question for Dr. Pate, make sure you send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Thanks, Dr. Pate.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudet. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.